Hey, you want that to go?
And all morning long, continuing different takeouts of the healthcare reform story. The bill passed last night in the House of Representatives. A few procedural details, then a presidential signature, and it will be law. One of the missions of healthcare reform is to reduce the cost of healthcare in the United States and also reduce the cost to the U.S. taxpayer. As far as Democrats are concerned, this is the number that they meet, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Listen to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
This health insurance reform legislation will save $138 billion in the first 10 years and $1.2 trillion in the second 10 years.
Well, with numbers like that, we need Louise Story, Wall Street and finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times. So the perils of Congress predicting anything 10 years out, let alone 20 years out, what do you make of these cost reduction numbers that come from the Congressional Budget Office that Nancy Pelosi was talking about there?
So, John, there's another figure you're not hearing much about, and that figure is $1,080,000,000. And what that figure is the $938 billion cost figure plus this deficit reduction figure of $138 billion. Those add up to more than $1 trillion, and that represents their estimate of the savings they're making. Those savings come from cuts in Medicare,
right,
and they come from new taxes. And so the reason, even though you're seeing $938 billion in new cost, the reason they're saying the deficit will be reduced is because they've put together a package with more savings, more cuts, and more taxes than they're spending.
How much of this is abstract, sort of waste reduction kinds of things that may or may not be realized versus real revenue coming in and real reductions in Medicare costs, reimbursement costs to doctors? Those are real checks that get written and printed.
Right. So they're estimating there'll be $460 billion or so of Medicare cost reductions. A lot of the skeptics and Republicans, for instance, say that it's very unlikely that you'll see those reductions actually happen. You know, it's a lot easier for costs to go up than for the savings you're expecting to actually happen. The other things that they did to meet this figure was they are also planning to use some of the savings that they get and extra income they get from Social Security. So they put into this $50 billion or so of money that'll come in extra Social Security taxes, even though some people argue that that money should really go to the Social Security fund.
Right. Now, the equation works like this. It's not as though we are subtracting $1 trillion from the expenditures that are happening now in Washington. We are saying if we do nothing, it's going to cost $1.3 trillion. Since we didn't do nothing, you subtract this number from $1.3 trillion and you get your huge sort of savings. Is that a valid way to do the math on cost savings? Assume an increase, erase the increase, and then call that your savings?
The problem that some critics are pointing out is that the assumptions from the Congressional Budget Office are that the tax increases go into effect right away and that we start getting all these savings right away. But the reforms, all these extra new costs, all the new programs, won't start for a few years.
Until 2014
right,
in most cases.
Right, to 2014. And so actually when you look at this 10 years, you're looking at 10 years of the savings and only 6 years of the new expenditures. So some critics are saying, well, you know, if you compared 10 years of the new expenditures to 10 years of the savings, it wouldn't come out like this.
So the 10 years is an arbitrary snapshot that maybe doesn't give us all reality.
Right.
Well, Louise Story, keep doing the math for us. Louise Story, of course, finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks.
And we also have Ibrahim with us. Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, who is our takeaway sports contributor. Louise and Ibrahim, let me ask you both a takeaway question today, because it is kind of a historic day. We're asking our listeners, today is a blank day for the United States. Louise?
Day to do the math. Do the math on healthcare.
It's always a day to do the math for
numbers
Louise.
Day.
Ibrahim?
Mild.
A mild day. Okay, Ibrahim, unimpressed with healthcare
overall
in Washington. But Ibrahim, we're here to talk to you about the NCAA tournament. And here's something that screwed up everybody's brackets.
What a performance. Cornell to the Sweet 16.
The first time since 1979 that an Ivy League team has gone under the second weekend of the tournament. Number 12 Cornell beat out number 4 Wisconsin 87-69. People's brackets falling into tatters all over. But in terms of basketball, really, really great game.
It was excellent basketball. I just want to make a point that my bracket in this particular game was not falling to pieces. I actually picked Cornell over Wisconsin in this game for four reasons. The top four players for Cornell are seniors. They've been to the tournament before. They've lost before. They've been playing together for 4 years. They're a strong team, and they played poised. They shot early in the shot clock. Wisconsin's defense was really tough, and they had one of the best defenses in the country, and they shot early in the shot clock, and they made their shots.
They came to win, clearly.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, the other obviously big game that surprised a lot of people was Kansas. Kansas lost to Northern Iowa.
Well, that was a classic a bracket buster. I don't think anyone in the country, including the president Barack Obama, had picked Kansas to lose so early in the tournament. And that was another thing. Sherron Collins, the senior point guard, he went down in a blaze of glory. And you wonder, did he really come 100% prepared, or did he overlook Northern Iowa? So you see two examples of, you know, John, you talked about it. This is really seniors, and this people come in to play their last game potentially, and you see two different sides of that coin.
He was trying to hold up the whole team, and it seemed like the team didn't come to play.
I agree with that, but that's also a coaching thing there as well,
exactly,
where you don't get your team and your guys ready to play.
Okay, so they're on 3 days rest, but let's talk a little bit about some of the other maybe surprises. What other team surprised you?
Well, I think it's interesting. Purdue is actually playing very well, and they won, and they're now in the Sweet 16. A lot of people had picked Purdue to be out because of their guard Bobby Hummel was hurt and injured. So that is a big surprise, and I think a lot of people had chosen them to fall off. Duke is rolling along, and I think they're quietly in the Southern bracket, and they're quietly, you know, doing well. They beat Cal this weekend. Everyone thought Cal was going to get them, and that was a big win. Ohio State and Georgia Tech, that was a great game, and Ohio State is looking like a potential champion in this one right now. And Georgia Tech, they played tough and they lost tough. So I think overall, the other game I just want to mention real quick is Michigan State.
They're doing well. Got to keep our eyes on it. Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, Takeaway Sports contributor.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.